You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
It is.
Today we're going to be talking about the sixth and kind of final serial of the 17th season of Doctor Who, Shada, which would have consisted of six episodes that would have aired from January 19th, 1980 to February 23rd, 1980. Elements were reused in Douglas Adams' 1987 novel Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, which was followed by the 1988 sequel The Lone Dark Tea Time of the Soul, half a sequel called The Salmon of Doubt in 2002, two BBC radio adaptations in 2007 and 2008, a comic book in 2015, and two different television series in 2010 and 2016. There was also a Tom Baker-narrated reconstruction of Shada in 1992, an Eighth Doctor Big Finish adaptation and web animation in 2003, an unofficial animated reconstruction by Ian Levine in 2011,
a
couple of unofficial adaptations by Jonathan Way and Paul Scoones, an official novelization by Gareth Roberts with an audiobook read by Lala Ward, both released on March 15th, 2012, and finally an animated reconstruction on November 24th, 2017, which is what we'll be talking about today.
True facts!
Jesus!
Yeah, for a serial that is famous for being unfinished, it is probably one of the most reissued Doctor Who serials ever produced. It's amazing.
Those are probably my longest Joe facts ever. And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. I still haven't figured out how he wants to be promoted out, but I will figure that out for the next one. Joining us today, we have a returning guest, Ben Padden.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a while.
Yeah, what's been up? What's been going on with you?
On a personal level, I moved. That's really it.
To where?
Just another apartment. But probably the biggest development in terms of stuff I do on the internet is that I also have a Doctor Who podcast now.
Ooh.
Yes. Ooh! Yeah.
No.
We started it, it launched at the beginning of this year, but we've been working on it since, I want to say, early to mid last year, and it is an actual play podcast where we play the Doctor Who role-playing game called The Game of Rassilon. It's a very similar title to yours, in part because, actually, when we first came up with the idea, it was going to be something that I did with you guys, that didn't happen, but now it is happening. We're actually just about to wrap up our season finale. We are, at the time this episode drops, I think we will be halfway through our season finale with one episode left to go. Then we're going to be doing kind of a talkback episode, like a Game of Rassilon Confidential. And then we have our live show that when we're recording this now, we just did the live show on Friday on August 23rd here in Burbank, California. And that will be going up probably, I think, end of October, beginning of November. And then we're going to take a couple of months off. Well, the show's taking a couple of months off, but we're working on season two. We are working on season two right now.
Very cool. I've listened to, I haven't listened to all of it, but I've listened to a good chunk of it. I think I'm halfway through the Star Trek Angels serial.
Yeah, that one. I'm particularly proud of. I feel like the show really finds its feet in terms of like everyone finding out, you know, getting a real grasp on their characters, and Michael and I, as the writers, kind of figuring out exactly what we wanted to do story-wise. We really figure that out, I think, in the next serial, which I can't remember which one that one is, but yes. Yes!
Cool. That's exciting.
Neat!
Where can people find that?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you asked. There are a number of places online that you can find it, including Adventures in Time and .space. Or if you're feeling a little maudlin, you could go to thedeath.zone. But probably the main place is just thegameofwrestlon.com, or just search your favorite podcast feed for The Game of Wrestlon. If you like Doctor Who, if you like role-playing games, and if you're a fan of podcasts like Not Another D&D Podcast or The Adventure Zone, this may well be right up your alley.
So go check that out.
Yes. We've produced more hours of Doctor Who in 2019 than Chris Chibnall made in 2018. And for that, I think that's impressive.
I think you deserve an award.
Yes, although we've yet to meet the levels of Big Finish. They put out 2,000 hours of Doctor Who every day, and I don't know how they manage it.
Time travel.
Yeah.
But today we're going to be talking about...
Shada.
Which was, I guess, cancelled. It was due to some sort of strike, I believe.
Yes, there was industrial action at the BBC. I believe it was an electrician's strike, because that's usually what it would be at the BBC during the 70s and the 80s. But they'd already done, I think, almost all of the location stuff. And then they had done a good chunk of the studio stuff. But then the strike happened, and that kind of suspended production for a while. And because production was suspended for so long, they never finished it. So there's been this half-finished Doctor Who serial that had achieved this kind of mythic status until about, I think, 92 was when the VHS release with the linking narration by Tom Baker was put out.
Then they animated it, the missing bits.
It is, yes, Shada is the second of the, what I'm going to dub the modern animated reconstructions, the first being Power of the Daleks, which the BBC paid an animation studio to animate the entirety of. Shada was the second one, in part because almost all of the cast was still alive, so they were able to get them in to record their dialogue, so they did that. They got pretty much everyone in except for the actor who plays Sally Avin, who unfortunately passed away between, you know, production and animation. But they were able to get everyone in. They did a couple of rewrites to kind of work around the fact that one of the actors was, like, very dead. Dennis Carey was the one who had passed away. He passed away in 86. He played Professor Chronotis in Shada. He was the Keeper in The Keeper of Traken, which you've not yet seen. And he was also the old man in Timelash, which you have also not seen. But he passed away in 86. He passed away during Colin Baker's tenure on the show.
But I think they did a really good job filling in the gaps.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about it. Let's dive in. So first off, this version of it is not broken up into episodes, even though it would have been 6 episodes originally. It's all one big mega movie. I did figure out where the cliffhangers were, would have been, so... I still have titles.
Because we were guessing. How were we right ever?
We were right a couple of times. We were wrong a couple of times, too.
Got it.
I will also point out, it is interesting because the version on the VHS version from 92, which is also the version that they put out on DVD a few years ago, that version does still have the cliffhangers and the end credits, even if the cliffhanger is being narrated at you by Tom Baker standing in the Doctor Who exhibition in Blackpool, and it still cuts to the end credits. It's interesting that they chose not to do that for the animated reconstruction and to make it one big, 2-hour and change long feature. It's interesting because I know that with Power of the Daleks and the Macra Terror, They didn't do that. They have individual episodes. So I think it's interesting that Shada became this kind of feature-long event rather than something that was split up.
Yeah, even in this, there are certainly scenes where you're like, well, that was definitely the cliffhanger.
And the other thing is, because the animated adaptation is the one that is considered, quote, canon by the TARDIS wiki, which is another thing altogether we should talk about at another point, because the TARDIS wiki, I have an ongoing observational gripe with the TARDIS wiki. We'll come back to that. Because the animated version is what is favoured, when the animated version came out, the TARDIS wiki removed all of the cliffhanger separations and all of the parts.
Yeah, I was going off of a transcript site to find out where the cliffhangers ended, which is still broken up into episodes, even though it's a transcript of the animated version. I think they combined the two.
Well, what happens first in the episode?
Well, first I give episode one a title, which is The Book of Rassilon.
Okay.
Nothing fancy, but that's what it is. But before it even starts, there's a little BBC announcement, which I thought was really funny. Because it's like, it basically says, we're airing this thing that it's been a little bit delayed, but here it is.
Yeah, it's like the BBC One logo that they would have had in 79, I think. And it's a really nice touch, especially for those of us who remember those continuity announcements. I mean, I won't, because 79 is definitely before my time, but I definitely remember versions of that from back in the day when I was a kid.
The first thing we see are a bunch of people sitting in a circle with they have triangles on their shirts, and there's a sphere in the middle of them. They're like sitting on this like round chair thing. The one guy who looks a bit like Sting wakes up. He's got scars on his face. Just a bunch of weird stuff starts happening. He's pressing things and everyone's wiggling.
There's no dialogue during this for quite some time.
Yeah, there's just the ship saying like random ship announcements and stuff.
And also very ominous music, which again, this is original new music. This is not music from 79. This is music that was composed in probably 2016, 2017, that feels so much like of its time. It feels very late 70s Doctor Who appropriate.
Was all of it?
Surprised to hear that they composed new music for this because by how much they reused that one piece of music that was in, what was it in?
Paris. City of Death.
They reused that bit of music constantly, and I kind of figured it was because they were just like, this is the music that we have.
Yeah, but there's some, they did do some new music for this, which is a huge change. Like, the VHS release also has its own original soundtrack, but it was done by, God, I forget who did the soundtrack for the VHS release, but it feels, the music doesn't fit the Tom Baker era, it feels more like late Sylvester McCoy.
But yeah, it definitely does use that music a lot and variations on it. This guy's name is Skagra, which we find out later, but he does a bunch of weird stuff, leaves these guys in a circle, gets this little floating ball, gets in a ship and goes.
Yeah, this whole sequence is not very clear. It's not immediately obvious what is happening just from looking at it. I actually feel like the Big Finish audio version does a better job of kind of establishing what this scene is supposed to be, because this is a scene that you see now and you don't really learn what is happening until like episode 3 or 4 of the serial, like halfway through the story.
It's certainly ominous though. Then we get the titles, which is always weird. I think even in Macroterra and maybe even in Power of Daleks, the Doctor Who credits don't show up until after like a little teaser. But then we cut to Chris Parsons is riding a bike through the streets for a while music plays. That's his characteristic, because he rides a bike.
It's definitely this. I think that they're like, we shot this on location music, because that's when it plays.
We're filming on location. We're filming on location. That doesn't work as well as when you were saying, we're actually in Paris. We're really in Paris.
We're really in Cambridge. Yeah, it's kind of,
there you go.
Yeah.
And he goes to visit Professor Carnitus.
Which is a little weird to, like, meet a character in Doctor Who that I have definitely met before.
Yeah, in a different medium. I kept wanting to call him Reg, but I don't think they ever call him that in this. So he's just Professor Carnitus.
Reg, being from Dirk Gently.
I love the way you pronounce the word Carnotus, because it's Carnotus, and you're saying Carnitus like it's some kind of, like, chronic illness.
I know. I even when I wrote it in my notes, I put an I instead of an O, and then I had to like fix it. Chronotis,
as in Professor Time Man.
Which is, it's weird because like I didn't, when I read Dirk Gently, I didn't know that it was like there were elements from Shada used in it. So, but I had like a very clear mental image of what he looked like, and then watching this, it's pretty much exactly how I imagined him.
It was dead on.
Except, in my mind, he had red hair, so, instead of white. But it's pretty much dead on. But he has the TARDIS in his little living room area, and doesn't really acknowledge it at all. Then he's so, like, later Chris is like, hey, what's this? And he's like, oh, I don't know, it was here.
Someone must have left it here while I was out. He's very fun in the way that he speaks. He's very sort of
distracting.
Distracted, yeah, sort of addle-brained might be the word, where he starts sentences and doesn't finish them, but he's very silly.
And no matter what's happening, if someone comes in, his first thing is he just checks to see if they want tea. Like, that's his running gag. Tea? And then he does a bit that's very similar to, what was it? When the Master was reading The War of the Worlds, but in this one, Chronotis is reading The Time Machine.
Of course. Because why not?
Because this episode has a time machine in it, unlike other episodes of Doctor Who, which don't. It's just this one.
Just this one.
So then we cut to footage I've actually seen before, because I saw the five Doctors. The Doctor and Romana are on a boat ride, and it's really cute.
It's honestly nice to see them just having a nice day. The Doctor and his companion just having a good time before there are monsters and before there's life-saving and running and stuff.
Were they married at this point, or was this before or after?
They were married from December 13th, 1980 to April of 82, says Google.
Okay, so this was before they were married.
Yes, but you can definitely, like, there are definitely some looks that they give each other during this serial, which definitely say, oh yeah, I'm hitting that.
I don't even remember what they were talking about. I just remember it was, like, cute.
Yeah, just some well-written jokes is all.
Yeah.
Some very, very Douglas Adams-y conversations on the subject of cause and effect and Newton and punting and all that fun stuff.
He loses his pole.
Which is not a euphemism.
There's some verbal comedy and some physical comedy. There's a lot of comedy. And then Skagra is watching them from the bridge, and his outfit is amazing. He's got this, like, really
fancy
hat.
So great.
It's all white. He's
just
got a
watching
big cape.
Him, like, he spends, like, part of the episode just, like, walking to a thing, and you're just like, yeah! Because, like, his shiny-ass cape is, like, flowing behind him, and you're like, he's about to fuck some shit up, and it's gonna be bad for sure, but I'm kind of excited for it, because he just looks great.
I love that, like, the novelization, which is an enjoyable novelization, it's just unfortunate that it is written by Gareth Roberts, who is a well-documented garbage baby. His novelization of Sharda is such a joy to read, and his take on Skagra's outfit is, that's Skagra trying to blend in. Like, that's not Skagra as, this is me, Skagra, this is how I am, and I will not debase myself. That is, oh, this is what humans wear, right? This is, yeah, why not?
I wish. Oh man, I would wear that outfit in a heartbeat.
He looks like a musketeer from the future.
Yeah!
Yes.
And he's also got this giant, like, grandmother purse, plaid looking.
It's really what makes the outfit, to be honest.
And it's the bag is full of voices. It just makes
too much whispering.
Peas and carrots, peas and carrots, peas and carrots.
Watermelon cantaloupe, watermelon cantaloupe. And but it also has his little, we will later see, it has his little sphere. The sphere from the opening is in it as well. It pans up from them in the boat to the sky, and then we pan down into animation.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting little transition. And we see more Chris riding his bike. And it's like a really nice, like, 3D thing. Because, like, he rides past the camera and the camera tilts around to follow him.
Yeah.
And I was, like, really impressed by the quality of the animation here. Oh, and he also, we forgot to say, when he was at the professor's, he got some books. He's taken the Book of Rassilon, which we'll find out later. But he drops them off in this, his, like, little, I don't know, I guess it's his apartment or something? I'm not sure. It's some lab or something. And there's books scattered about. And if you, like, pause the DVD, you can see The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a book on a shelf. With it, My Story by Zaphod. There's some other thing.
Yeah, there's some nice little nods. And it's the kind of nod that is, it's nice in the same way that the nods to Doctor Who in Good Omens were nice.
Just, they're not, like, super blatant. Well, maybe the Zaphod one, but the other ones are a little more hidden. And they're not, like, blaring at you, distracting you from the episode. The book starts doing stuff on its own. It moves, it falls. There's a great bit, which I didn't actually catch the first time I watched it. I only caught it when I was making GIFs, where he's got the book and he's flipping through it. And as he flips through it, the clock on the wall behind him just, like, spins. And then he flips back the other way, and the clock can't spin the other way back.
That, for real, is a nightmare that I used to have.
Wow, that must have been unpleasant for you to have to relive.
It's the kind of nightmare where you woke up and you were, like, terrified, but then when you thought about it, you're like, nothing happened in that dream.
That's like most of my dreams. Like, oh no, I made a sandwich! It was terrifying in context.
I keep having a recurring nightmare in which I'm on Jeopardy, and I don't know any of the questions and any of the answers, and I still somehow end up winning $200,000, and I feel racked with guilt about it because I'm not sure how it happened, and I feel like I'm stealing money from a man who is dying of cancer.
That's amazing.
You could just donate that money to the other person.
No, I can't because it's a dream. That's the worst part is I know more often than not when I'm dreaming, and I know that the idea of stealing the money from the man is a source of anxiety, and the fact that I can't give it back because it's not real is also a source of anxiety.
Oh, that's a double whammy.
You know, I used to have those reoccurring dreams where it's like,
I'm sorry, that's press your luck.
You're going out on stage, but like you don't know any of the work, like you don't know the routine or whatever. I would have that, but I would be like, oh no, this is a dream, so I haven't rehearsed, and like not realizing enough that it's a dream, so I don't have to worry about it.
I love dreams like that because I frequently have dreams where I've been asked to do stand-up at an event, but I didn't know and didn't prepare anything. So I just get up on stage and bullshit for 10 minutes and everyone laughs. Like, I resolve that issue by remembering, oh, I've got other material I can do just because I didn't plan a set for this. But my brain's like, no, you should feel anxious about this. No, I'm fine. I do this.
Why are our brains such dicks?
I don't know. He's messing with the book, and the book's kind of alive.
He tries to stab it at one point, too, and it moves out of the way. He eventually, like, x-rays it, which I thought was just a giant microwave.
I also thought that.
And then it explodes like he left a fork in there. But the book is fine. The doctor and Romana wind up at Cambridge, and they bump into a great side character named Wilkin, and ask him if Professor Cronotis is in. I'm never gonna say his name right. And he's just a delightful little man in a bowler hat.
This kind of slightly Bob Monkhouse-esque, Ronnie Corbett-looking little man in a bowler hat, which is definitely slightly too small for his head.
And he's just delightful and helpful whenever he can be. He basically tells the doctor, "You've asked me this question like 4 different years." And then the doctor's like, "You know what? I think I might have even asked you another time, but I was in a different body." And Wilkin is just like, "Yep, okay."
Like, I'm not going to challenge that at all.
And then they go have tea with the professor, who reveals that he's a Time Lord.
Which is always, I don't know, I feel like we don't use this enough. Every time we get to meet another Time Lord, I'm like, yay.
Oh, Tony, you're going to reach a point where Here Are Time Lords reaches diminishing returns.
I have heard that.
And I will warn you, it's coming fast. That time is arriving very quickly.
I like the idea, though, of like just another sort of Time Lord that just like fucked off, you know?
Yeah,
like,
renegade.
Yeah, we've had how many of those so far? 3? We've had the meddling monk, the master, and the doctor. I don't think we've had any others this. Well, the guy with a very like ridiculous accent.
Oh, the one who first calls the Doctor Theta Sigma.
Drax.
I don't know if he's necessarily a renegade, but he's definitely, like, off on his own.
Yeah.
No, he is explicitly labeled on the TARDIS wiki as a renegade Time Lord.
Man, there's a lot of renegade Time Lords then, I guess.
To be fair, whenever they go to Gallifrey, it's super shitty and boring. So, like, it's not surprising that a bunch of people are like, actually, this sucks, and we have spaceships and time machines. What if we just fucked off literally anywhere else?
It's like, we built time travel. We're not going to use it, though. Wink.
We just have all of these machines kind of lying around, it seems like.
I don't know what their deal is fully. It's just like temptation. That's what it is.
I am looking at the wiki entry for Renegade Time Lords, and most of them are just incarnations of the Doctor or the Master. But it should be pointed out, a lot of them are from audio plays, because of course they are. There's also every non-canon incarnation of the Doctor is also listed here. And so is the Curator. Barusa is listed in here. That's a potential spoiler. You've seen the 5 Doctors, though, so it's fine.
I have paid attention to it. It was a riff track. I mostly listen to the jokes.
Okay, cool. So you're going to half pay attention to the thing I just said as well.
That's what I do anytime you talk.
Cool. You sound like my girlfriend.
Aw. But they talk a bit. The doctor says they've showed up because the professor has sent them a signal. And the professor's like, I don't know. I don't know if I've done that yet or not. But then he finally remembers that it was possibly about a book, which is the book that...
The Book of Rassilon.
Yeah, that Chris has got.
And they're, like, pulling these books off the shelf, like, one by one, going through them and, like, reading the titles before he's like... Oh, yeah. Actually, somebody came and borrowed a bunch of books.
My favorite part of that is when they're, like, looking at a nursery rhyme book from Gallifrey, and Romana's like, "Aw, I had that when I was a Time Tot."
Time Tot is a very good phrase. I like it.
And meanwhile, in the Skagra plot, he has stolen a car and Terminator taken his clothes.
Which was very sad.
He eventually changes into this, like, leather... Or not leather. Is it leather? It's like a brown jacket thing, like a bomber jacket looking thing.
I'm going to let you in on a shocking secret. Leather sometimes is brown.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But it could be suede, right?
I mean, I don't remember what material the jacket was made out of.
I just know it was fairly cool, but it wasn't as cool as the white musketeer outfit. But he drives off to the middle of this field that has like a red carpet in the middle of it. And then he just proceeds to walk upwards into space and disappear. And we find out that's his ship. He's got
his
this
invisible
big...
ship, which honestly, the red carpet, on the one hand, it's like a good trick for remembering where you parked your invisible ship. On the other hand, it's a pretty big marker that's like, hey, there's an invisible ship here.
Well, his other option was, you know what, I really should probably give myself a hint that the ship is here, and then he just paints it. He just paints it lime green. So there's this giant lime green spaceship.
Then he uses that to chroma key out the green.
Right.
When he needs to. He chroma keys it out for everybody else's perception except his own.
That's just a someone else's problem filter. Yeah.
SCP filled, which is also a Douglas Adams thing. But he goes inside, which the entire interior of this ship is animated except for one prison cell, like one little holding cell. That one's live action.
I like the idea that it's the space itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of works out that way for the most part. Everything is animated except for the location filming, the professor's office, or his little library and stuff. This holding cell. Everything else is animated, I believe. And also where the triangle guys are. So I sort of imagine it as physical spaces are animated. But he goes into his ship and he talks to the ship and asks about the doctor. Which actually this scene has a combination of animation and live action because they pulled clips from previous episodes.
That's the first cliffhanger?
That's the first cliffhanger.
That was not one of the breaks that I guessed.
It might have just been like he walks into the ship and you're like, whoa, where'd he go? That's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I have called the Sphere of Skagra.
Skagsphere.
Skagsphere, that's good. There's a lot of S words in this. There's the Sphere, there's Skagra, there's Shada, Salyavin. Krargs doesn't really mix in, but it has that K of other stuff. Speaking of Salyavin, this is the first mention of it. The doctor, they're looking for the book, and the doctor mentions this criminal, Salyavin, and how much he admired him, even though he was a criminal. And I believe the professor's like, ah, Salyavin, glad to be rid of him, Salyavin.
Kind of like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
What a handsome jerk that Salyavin was.
I heard Salyavin has a six-pack.
That Salyavin is shredded.
Then he's like, oh, right, this Chris guy, or he doesn't say Chris, he says this guy came and probably took the book. Who is it? He's like, oh, man, if only I could, I have a memory like a, what is it? What's that thing called? And then they keep talking, and he's like, oh, I remember. And they're like, oh, who is it? Who is it? And he's like, Civ, I've got a memory like a sieve. And they're like, oh, God damn it. Some great Douglas Adams bits going on.
We also should mention that the doctor's very mad that the professor has taken specifically books from Gallifrey because right. They're dangerous.
And he's like, I didn't mean to. I forgot to not purposefully take it. My favorite part also about when he's trying to figure out who the guy is that took it, he starts going through the alphabet. He's like, A, B, no, C, no. And he just goes through all of it and he gets to Y. And he's like, young Parsons. It's Chris Parsons. Like he got there from a descriptor of him instead of his actual name. So good. Chris meets up with this woman named Claire, who we first meet in animation before we actually... I think she's the only one who we meet in animation before we meet her in live action. And she looks at the book a bit and tells Chris, why don't you just go talk to the professor about it? He's the one who had the book. Why are you asking me? She's like, I'll keep looking at the book if you just go back and ask him questions about it.
So. I like that he says, like, well, isn't that kind of obvious? And she's like, I guess that's why you haven't bothered to do it then.
Chris is going to go back to the professor. The doctor has just found out that it's Chris, so he's going to go see Chris. And they comedically pass each other on bikes. The professor's going to leave because he's ran out of milk for the tea. And Romana's like, oh, I'll just get some from the TARDIS. And then while she's away and he's alone, Skagra comes in and attacks the professor with the sphere. It floats out of his Mary Poppins bag and bumps into the professor's head, and he falls down. It basically absorbs your mind. That's why it's full of voices.
Perfect.
Like, are they called anything, or are they just spheres?
They're called Skag spheres now.
K-9 and Romana come out of the TARDIS and find the professor all laid out, And Chris enters as well, and everybody's very shocked by what's happened to the professor. Chris is shocked by the situation, the robot dog, the TARDIS, and the fact that the professor isn't human. He gets a lot thrown at him all at once.
His reaction, too, is just like, okay, just everyone give me a minute to process things. I'll get there.
He has one of the better reactions to going into the TARDIS and seeing how big it is. Because she's, like, giving him directions to go get something from the TARDIS to put on the professor. And she's, like, giving him very complicated directions. And he's like, okay, whatever. And then he goes in there and immediately just, like, runs back out like, what's it? But they put this, like,
collar
on him.
You know, some kind of sci-fi space collar.
And then I think that's when she's like, his brain, it's saving his brain thing. And then Chris is like, human brain things don't work like that. And she's like, oh, he's not got a human brain thing. He's got a Time Lord brain thing.
Yes, his brain is not like other brains. It's a cool brain.
You wouldn't know about it. So then the doctor meets Claire. They talk about the book that is not a book.
It's an artifact.
Of Gallifrey. Of Rassilon. And then they carbon date it, and I don't know how carbon dating works.
But I'm pretty sure not like that.
They say it is negative 20,000 years old. Then they're just like, immediately like, oh, I guess that's time travel nonsense. None of them go, maybe the machine's broken. I don't think you can carbon date something and it give you a negative.
Can you carbon date something that's alien anyway? Would you get an accurate
reading?
Yeah.
Also, I mean, carbon dating is already by its very nature inaccurate. Like, it's not it doesn't actually give us super useful data points.
So this is all bullshit.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it's science fiction.
Emphasis on the fiction.
Sure.
But it all sounds cool enough. They put this collar on the professor and they're checking him out, and they amplify his heartbeat. And it's in Morse code. And as we were watching that, I think someone said, yes, Gallifreyan Samuel Morse.
Gallifreyan Morse code, invented by Gallifreyan Samuel Morse. The end.
But he taps out a message, which is, beware the sphere, beware Skagra, beware Shada. And then the secret is in the... And then he dies.
He dies. I hate when that happens. You couldn't just live for a little bit longer.
When people die, you hate that?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I don't care about that so much. I hate when people die before they can give me necessary information.
I hate when people die leaving me unfulfilled.
I hate when people die with unfinished business, because then they haunt me.
Because it's really inconvenient for me personally. And that's one thing I can't stand.
Is being inconvenienced. You know, other people dying, I'm just going to say it. It's fucking selfish.
They should really stop.
Right.
What's their deal?
Yeah, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I realize it's not fashionable or trendy or, you know, considered hip or cool to say this out loud. And maybe this is gonna get me some into some trouble down the line, but I think dying is a deeply selfish act, and I wish people would think about the way it affects the other people. I think dying is selfish.
Dying is selfish.
Dying is deeply selfish. How dare you die?
Dying is selfish should be on your tombstone.
No, I already know what I want on my tombstone. Have I told you what I want on my tombstone?
Is it pepperoni?
No.
Oh.
But that's a bad joke and you deserve to be alone for the rest of your life because of how bad that was. No, I want my gravestone to say, and I want it to say these words exactly, in quotations. I don't care, just make sure it isn't something stupid.
Perfect. That's beautiful. It reminds me of those, like, banner gags in BoJack Horseman.
Yes.
Why is this so hard?
Or, beloved brother, missed by all, and under that, a picture of a cherub. I basically want my gravestone to look like a screwed up Walmart birthday cake. That's the goal.
I just want mine to be, like, change out every once in a while, and it's just advertising.
You're gonna sell advertising space on your headstone?
Yeah. And, like, some poor guy has to go out there and, like, and it's going to be carved. It's not going to be. He's going to, like, scrape it down and then re-chisel out, like.
Eat at Subway?
Yeah. Save money by switching to Geico.
You're going
to
reach a point in, like, 10 years' time where your gravestone is wafer thin because it's had so many ads.
Exactly.
That's Why don't you just cover it in stickers?
No, because I want it to be carved. They could switch it out eventually.
Here's the thing, though. Like, you're going to die first, and that sounds expensive.
That's fair. Well, dying is selfish, Tony.
I know. I'm real annoyed about it.
All right, so Skagra confronts the Doctor, shoots his little sphere at him, and then there is a fantastic chase sequence with the Doctor on his bicycle running away from this sphere. It reminded me a lot of a PBS show called Ghost Rider.
The little ghost, and he would take words that are already there and write messages.
Yeah, it's just this little floating sphere.
Yeah, I remember that. He was like a floaty color thing.
And that's what the sphere reminds me of.
That is alien to me entirely. I have no point of reference for that.
What did it air on? You said PBS?
I think it's PBS. That's what I remember it being.
I have vague memories of it. I don't
remember any of the kids on the show. I just remember the floating ghost ball.
Yeah.
But also, there was a special call out to us in this serial. The Doctor rides by in this chase sequence, being chased by a sphere. There is a group of singers, I guess, just singing on the street. Just like a barbershop quartet sort of situation, except there's like 8 of them. And they're all singing the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what shot are you talking about? Yeah. Who are we like, Chattanooga?
Well, we are from near there.
I know that song.
Yeah, they very specifically did that for you.
I think so.
Yeah. That's newly shot material. That's one of only 2 scenes that was shot fresh for this.
And they had to de-age Tom Baker for it. They used that, like,
good
Marvel movie magic.
That's where most of the money went, yeah.
Just that one scene, just for us. Thank you. Thank you, BBC. And the Doctor turns a corner, drops the book, falls out of his bike basket, and Skagra picks it up. And the Doctor stops and rests his bicycle against a sign that says, "No cycling." And he apologizes to the sign.
Wouldn't you?
No. I'm a jerk. Yeah, I'd be like, fuck you, sign. And wheelie out of there.
Don't lie. You don't know how to do a wheelie.
No. And he runs down this alleyway, tries to climb a fence and cannot, and then tries to crawl underneath the gate and gets Winnie the Pooh in there. And he does this, like, face, which is clearly the cliffhanger. That is the end of Episode 2, we're now into Episode 3, which I have called The Invisible Vessel, or Invesible.
Oh, I can't decide if I like that or not.
You do. It's fine. Romana immediately...
No, you nailed it. Keep going.
Romana arrives with the TARDIS, and the Doctor goes, huzzah! He literally changes his, like, face to a smiling face, and he does, like, a fist pump in the air. And then he crawls out, they get in the TARDIS and go. And the sphere just sort of, like, hangs around a bit while they get away. Like, it was right there. And he's just like, oh, what's going on? I'll give you guys a little bit of
leeway
here. It's
gonna assess the situation,
I guess. Chris is looking at the dead body of the professor who just disappears. I'm not entirely certain what that's about.
They say he must be on his last regeneration. Which makes it sound like when Time Lords die, they just are self-disposing.
Also, like, he comes back later, and I'm still not entirely certain how that works, how he came back. I assume there's time traveling nonsense.
It's a little cheaty.
Little Cheaty is a character in the Good Place spinoff, Young the Good Place. Baby the Good Place.
The Good Place Babies.
There you go, The Good Place Babies, starring Little Cheaty.
Good Place Babies, it's a moral quandary.
K-9 starts tracking the sphere, and we get a completely unneeded scene of this guy fishing who gets attacked by the sphere and dumped into the river. I guess Skagra needed some fishing knowledge.
Probably just, like, local knowledge, right?
Sure.
Like just intel. Like, you don't know, you're on an alien planet, you don't know shit.
I guess so. K-9's track the sphere, they all TARDIS out of the professor's room as Claire enters. And finds nobody. But they get to the field, and they see the sphere disappear into the invisible ship, and they proceed to mime around it, like touching the ship. And when he touches the ship, it makes this, like, hum noise, and it really looks like the Doctor's playing a theremin. But they go inside the ship. Romana, Chris, and K-9 are immediately taken away by this cube special effect to the holding cell that does exist. Skagra finds the Doctor and says, hey, I want you to decode this book. He wants him to read the book to him because he can't understand it. And then the Doctor proceeds to read it, and he just speaks some absolutely beautiful gibberish. And then he's like, blah, 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 blah.
I'm paraphrasing, of course.
It was better than that, yeah.
And he's like, I know it's in, I know that this book is in code, and I want you to decode it. And the doctor's like, oh, I can't. I'm just too stupid.
It's one of my favorite moments from the entire thing. Is I'm just a profoundly stupid moron. I'm so, and he just keeps reiterating how brilliantly obscenely stupid he is, and I love it.
This Gambit feels very Second Doctor.
It does.
Yes,
I love that whole scene. This serial is one of the funniest serials we've had so far. So since probably City of Death,
yeah.
I wonder why that is. It's Douglas Adams. And then Skagra gets tired of the Doctor's bullshit and is like, well, I'll just get the information from you with my sphere. And the sphere attacks the Doctor, which I assumed was going to be, was one of the cliffhangers, but it's not.
Huh.
It just keeps going. Meanwhile, in the holding cell, Chris is complaining about the fact that he was going to turn in a paper disproving alien life.
Let's be honest here. There's no way that paper was good anyway. So he's fine.
I think Romana says something like, oh, blast, in response to something. And K-9 goes, duck! And then tries to shoot their way out of the cell, and everybody... It doesn't work because the cell
bounces.
Is, yeah, and it's blast-proof. Then Claire runs into Wilkin, because she's trying to find Chronotis. She's like, warns Wilkin about this evil, dangerous book. And if he bumps into Chronotis, he should tell him about this book. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. He's like, you just go stay in his office in case he returns, and I'll go look around for him. And then as he's leaving, he goes... Nowadays, they'll publish anything.
He then looks dead into the camera and says, won't they, John Nathan Turner?
Stephanie Meyer.
Oh, good jokes.
Romana is in the cell and she says, I wish I wasn't in this cell. And then a cube appears around her and disappears. She disappears.
Perfect. Flawless.
And Chris is like, that's the key. We have to wish our way out of here. I do believe in fairies.
And then Chandler Bing shows up and says, and I just want $1 million! And nothing happens.
Precisely. And then he also says, oh, blast. K-9 extends his little gun snoot.
Gun snoot!
And then he's like, no, 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 no. Good boy. And Skagra takes Romana to the TARDIS. I don't know why he drags her around, why he needs her. I guess just wants a little prisoner or something. And they TARDIS away. And then the Doctor is passed out in the ship on the floor, and he wakes up. He's fine. And then the ship starts talking to him, and he's like, well, what he did was he gave it a copy of his mind and not his actual mind.
He convinced it that he was stupid, and so it didn't take as much as it could.
He pretends to be dead so that the ship will do whatever he wants, because he's like, I'm not a threat anymore because I'm dead. You can take my orders and it'll be fine.
Right.
And the ship's like, okay.
The idea that machines are logical to a fault against it.
Which is a very, I mean, it's kind of a sci-fi trope anyway, but it's definitely a very Douglas Adams-y solution.
Very much is. And then in increasingly good Douglas Adams fashion, it backfires on the Doctor as well when the ship is like, well, since there's no one in this room who's alive, I can turn the oxygen off.
Perfect.
And the Doctor's like, oh, shit, no. Because he also, like, orders the release of the prisoners, Chris and K-9 and Romana. And then he passes out, and that is the end of episode 3.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now into episode 4, which I've called The Key to Shada. Okay, so Claire is snooping around the professor's office and finds secret shit. She turns some books around, and there's like a control panel, and then she presses some buttons because that's what you do. And then things explode and she falls down. And then Wilkin comes to check on her and opens the door to the professor's room, and there's just nothing. There's blue sparkly shit. And Wilkin does a very comedic, what? Face to the camera. But K-9 and Chris are cubed out of the cell, and they go around exploring the ship. And there's a great funny bit that was very well animated, and it's all, there's no dialogue, so this is all just animation gags, I guess. They find the door to wherever the Doctor's at, and K-9 just immediately blasts it with his
gun snoot,
and it does nothing. And then Chris looks at the K-9 for a second and then just presses a button next to the door. And the door's open. And then he looks down at K-9 and just shrugs. It was so well timed out and animated. I love that. Then they find the doctor. The air gets turned back on because Chris is there. Chris needs air. And then the doctor's like, where's Romana? And like he's like, I don't know. She got cubed out before we did. Maybe Skagra took her. Well, actually, the doctor figures out Skagra takes her. And the doctor is eating jelly babies at this point. And when he says that Romana is missing, he just goes, Skagra! And chucks his jelly babies.
A whole bag.
And then he's like, he must suffer. Which, damn. That seemed a little intense from the doctor. But Skagra and Romana land on a spaceship, and we meet a new creature. We don't see their body yet. We just see that classic Doctor Who vision thing of, like, it's all red and, like, multifaceted. But it's, Skagra's got these little minions called Krogs.
Basically, it's, the best way to describe a Krog is it's the thing that exists when you have run out of money, but still need to make something big and imposing, and you don't have a lot around, but you do have lots of vinyl floor tiles and a staple gun.
And then they put, like, a weird effect over it. Like, it reflects things or something. And there's, like, red shiny shit on them. Skagra does his whole big, I'm a villain thing, and sort of explains his whole plot to Romana. He gives a whole big speech about stars and entropy and making a new person. Not people, a person. And that's when he makes a Krog. Which the animation for that's really cool. Like, it builds outwards. It, like, shows, like, skeletal structures and all the nerves and stuff. And then, like, a big Muppet body appears over it. Yeah, actually, I thought the animated version of the Krog looked really cool. And then we see the actual Krog. And I'm like, oh, that's not as impressive.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that the shots of K-9 using his gun snoot to hold back the Krog later, where we only see the Krog from, like, the feet up. Like Quentin Tarantino guest directed this particular, that's reconstruction stuff. They shot those bits for the animated reconstruction. And you can tell because the costume looks slightly different and we don't get to see all of it because there isn't all of it.
I thought that shot was very close up. Why didn't they just animate it?
This looks super clear.
Yeah. Cause it's just like a Krog knee and it just shakes a little bit. So the doctor realizes they need to return to wherever the ship had come from. And then basically makes the ship a TARDIS somehow?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
A little bit.
There's three TARDISes, TARDI, in this serial. There's, you know, the main one, there's the professor's room, and then there's this one that he just turns into a TARDIS. So Claire wakes up after having exploded everything, and then bumps into the professor, who's in pajamas, and is alive again for reasons.
There is some flim-flammy. There's at least, like, a lampshade there of, like, because you activated my TARDIS at just the right time, my consciousness is fine. Don't ask any more questions about it.
And he explains that, you know, this room is a TARDIS, and that he says the book is a key. It's a key to Shada, which is a prison that the Time Lords have forgotten about. And that they need to stop Skagra, because Skagra is going to want to free Salyavin, who was put into Shada. He needs Salyavin for some evil purpose. So the Doctor, Chris, and K-9 have arrived on the ship that we saw at the beginning, at the very beginning of the serial with the Triangle Man. And that's when the Krog pops out and K-9 has to shoot it to keep it at bay. And then they go explore the ship and then they find all of those Triangle Men, except now they're all old. They got lots of hair and very long fingernails. They look like they just walked out of a Monty Python sketch.
Almost certainly.
The Doctor hooks up one of the old guys. Well, he puts Chris onto the circle of chairs and connects him up to it.
It's the circle of chairs and it moves the plot. Sorry, I had to make my presence felt because I felt like I've been too quiet.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
You should release an album.
Called The Circle of Chairs.
You should, and they should all be Lion King parodies.
Or just all parodies of that song that are all vaguely Doctor Who themed.
The Circle of Time?
Yes.
Full Circle, we've got that coming up. I don't know what it's about, but it's the title of an episode. So the Doctor hooks Chris up to the Circle of Chairs, which powers something. It powers the old guy. It, like, brings him back to life. So that he can question him. And then he finds out that all of these old guys were part, they were all like super geniuses that were part of this think tank, and Skagra was one of them, and he took all of their brain juice to do something, but he still needs Sally Aven to finish it.
One of them looks directly into the camera and says, I've lost me mojo!
Also, I want to say, these are all like some of the smartest people from the universe. All white dudes. Just saying.
Shocking.
Surprise, surprise. They are cut short by a Krarg popping in because K-9 gave up and let the Krarg by. And that's the cliffhanger, is the Krarg coming in. That's the end of episode 4.
Woo!
We're now into episode 5, which I have called One with the Universe.
Okay.
Because making the universe one person.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Chris adorably offers to fight the Krarg and, like, put him up sort of thing. Does, like, the Captain America before he's Captain America in the, you know, alleyway. I can do this all night sort of deal.
I love that you said that like you were crying, like a teary-eyed, I can do this all night.
Because that's how I would react in that situation. And then, I don't know.
Some stuff happens.
The Krarg smashes into stuff, which is going to cause the ship to explode, so they gotta get out of there. The Doctor and Chris and K-9 all get away as the Krarg just starts smacking into the old people. And that's actually a decent effect when you, like, hit stuff. Little red sparks go psh, psh. And then they get into the Skagra TARDIS.
The SCARDIS.
What's that stand for?
Men in Black.
And then, as they disappear, the whole place explodes and then spins. All those old people, think tank people, dead. They didn't even really try to save
they
them.
Really didn't?
I think the Doctor started to go back in there, and Chris was like, no, we gotta get out of here. They're old. They've lived their lives.
They're not actually old, though.
I mean, that's fair. And then they proceed to talk the ship, using logic, to take them to Skagra's home? So that would be his base, where he's been making all the Krargs and such. Really, the Krargs don't do a whole lot. They're just there to be a monster, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been fine with just Skagra and the spheres. I don't think you really need the Krarg.
Forgot about them?
They don't really do much. They're mostly just there to be, like, muscle.
Yeah.
Claire and the professor go to work on fixing the TARDIS after she blew it up. She lets her hair down, and I think she's very attractive. Just saying.
She's very attractive when she had her hair up.
Both are good. And then she's like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing on this thing. So the professor is like, okay, I'm about to do a thing. You can't tell anybody I did it.
It's probably ethically sketchy, but here it goes.
His eyes glow, and then he turns into the Incredible Hulk.
No? He transfers all of his knowledge into her.
Yeah.
So she just has some Time Lord brain shit now, and apparently that's just fine.
Yeah, it's just a thing that has no ongoing ramifications for a human whatsoever.
And I'm not angry or bitter about it whatsoever. We can move on.
Why on earth would you be? There's nothing to be upset about. There's nothing to... Do you want to finish this bit, or are we, or do we want to play it out to its logical conclusion?
I'm still not over Donna Noble. I never will be. And okay, apparently this one time it happened, and it was just fine.
At no point does she go binary, 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 binary.
Okay.
Maybe Claire's just stronger than Donna Noble.
All right.
There we go. That's it. We did it.
Whew. I can feel the heat coming off of Tony right now.
Fucking awful. No. What happens next? I'm too angry.
The Doctor is on Skagra's base now and bumps into them. And Skagra gives his speech again and says he doesn't want to take over the universe. That's too pedestrian. That's child's play. He wants to be the universe.
I can't remember if this actually comes up in the version on the Blu-ray, or if it's from the book. I think it's from the novelization. But there's this bit about how when Skagra was 5, he determined there was no god. In determining that there was no gods, you know, most people, you know, just become atheists, or they, you know, they look for something else to fulfill them spiritually. In the book, in the novelization written by Gareth Trashboy Roberts, Skagra comes to the conclusion that means there's a situation vacant. That means there's a job opening.
I like that idea. It's definitely not in the animation. So it's it's definitely from the novelization. Huh.
I do. I mean, it's an interesting idea of wanting there to just be like one universal consciousness, like a Katamari ball of the universe.
It'd be like using machine to turn everyone in the world into you.
Can you imagine?
No.
Some sort of master race.
I can't get angry about master race all over again. I can't do it. That was your, like, favorite moment.
It was. It was so gloriously stupid. It was worth it for that terrible, terrible pun.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So he gives his whole speech, and then the doctor is like, basically, run. And then they all run. But he says some weird word. I don't remember what it was.
What?
He says some word. I don't know what it was. And, like, Romana doesn't know what it is either, so she doesn't run. Is this, like, jinx or something? I don't know. It was some weird thing.
Jinx?
It wasn't jinx. And then the doctor says, jinx! And then runs. He grabs Chris and runs. And Skagger says, kill them. And then Romana says, what's a jinx? As she's still being held by the Krarg.
What's a jinx?
I don't know. In the next scene, the doctor and Chris, they hide in this little alcove as the Krarg goes by. And the doctor says, clever jinx that, don't you think? I made them think I was trying to get to the TARDIS. What were you trying to do? Get to the TARDIS. But yeah, I don't know what a jinx is.
I'm Googling it now.
A change direction suddenly and nimbly, as when dodging a pursuer. A sudden quick change of direction.
Well, I'm glad we settled that.
An educational podcast.
In roughly 10 minutes.
What you guys don't realize is, obviously this gets cut up in the edit, but we spent 4 hours trying to figure out what that was. And I imagine a lot of that will be left on the cutting room floor. But I'm very tired and my throat is so hoarse because we got very heated talking about it.
We said some unkind things too.
Right, that we cannot take back.
Yeah, this is probably going to be my last time on this podcast, to be honest, because I mean, frankly, that we could all agree to continue recording is nothing short of a minor miracle. Let's just get through this. Let's just finish the episode. And then I don't want to see or hear from either of you ever again.
That's fair.
At least we all agree on that.
I mean, we're going to have some discussions about our marriage.
Yeah, that's true. I think even if we do get divorced, like we talked about multiple times during that argument,
we should
at least continue the podcast for the fans.
We can talk about that off mic.
For the Rassle Daddies.
Don't bring this over here.
Which is a term we also came up with during the break. I do like that it's weird that even though everyone is angry with each other, that Joe is divorcing Tony, but is going to marry me. And I'm not quite sure how that happened.
Even though I still hate you.
Yeah.
I do love you, so.
To be honest, I ship it. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
It's very romantic.
You were the one who suggested we get married, which is...
Right.
Very strange.
And we both were just like, yeah, obviously.
Joe can't be alone.
Yeah, I've seen Joe alone. I agree wholeheartedly. But I wish you mean I've watched him through the window without his knowledge or consent.
That's fair. I did the same to you.
Good.
I knew that. I knew that from both of you, and that's why I knew you guys belonged together.
When we get married, we're not even going to live together. We're just going to live on opposite sides of the same window.
Yes.
Anyway. Doctor Whom.
Doctor Whomst.
Ooh, that sounds like a rap. The doctor and Chris run into the professor's office, and then they all get caught up on what the situation is. I believe they just sit down and have tea, and they're like, let's discuss things.
We all got a debrief for a minute.
It seemed a little like, oh shit, things are going on, and then they just sort of sit down and are like... So anyway, Shada... And they realize that's where Skagger is going, is to Shada. And he's figured out how to use the book with the TARDIS in order to...
Get there.
Yeah, the book, and you use the book with the TARDIS. Use book with TARDIS to get to Shada.
Great!
Yeah, it's very text
that was
adventure.
Very well explained, thank you.
Yeah.
It's an ancient and worshipful lore of Gallifrey with a pulley in the middle.
That's like a pop-up book. So, yes, Skagger goes to Shada... Releases a bunch of prisoners.
But the one prisoner that they're looking for...
is Sally Yavin.
And he is already gone.
Yeah, the doctor and everybody show up too at the same... Like, they're all there at once as he's about to open the cell.
Sally Yavin, by the way, he wants his knowledge because his specialty is, like...
Fucking shit up!
No! like, beaming into other people's minds, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He can control people, and yeah. So
Skagra can take people's minds, but he wants to, like, get in there, too.
Okay, so this, like, legitimately shocked me. So they open the cell, and, like, before they open the cell, I was like, I bet it's gonna be the doctor in there or something. But it's empty, and then we find out that the Professor Chronotis, is Sally Aven. And I was like, oh, shit! How did I not see that coming? Which, I have to say, I've been shocked by a plot twist twice now in Doctor Who, and both of them are Douglas Adams.
It really feels like you just weren't paying attention.
Yeah, that's also possible. I didn't see this coming.
He did the mind thingy earlier?
I know, but the Master does that shit all the time.
That's true.
I didn't think about it. But that one and the reveal of who the actual villain was in Pirate Planet both surprised me. But yeah, I think this is one of the scenes that had to be rewritten a bit, because I think the Professor said in the original script that he's like, oh yeah, I'm Sally Aven. But because they did not have the actor, like, they had to give a lot of his dialogue to the Doctor. And the Doctor's like, oh wait, you're a Sally Aven. And the Professor just, like, nods.
It is kind of funny when you get to, like, the animated stuff and you're like, wow, the Doctor sure does sound older.
Yeah.
It's almost like so much time has passed.
Romana sounds older. Chris sounds older. They all sound older.
I don't think the Doctor sounds... I think Tom Baker still sounds very Tom Baker. He doesn't sound that much older. And especially because I've been listening to a lot of Big Finish stuff over the last few months as I commute in and out of work. I recently listened to their 20th anniversary Big Finish set, which was The Legacy of Time. And Tom Baker, I think there are definitely moments where you can tell, yeah, this is not the same man who was running up and down corridors in the 70s. But for the most part, he still has the same kind of vim and vigor that he had way back in the day, yeah.
He just has a little bit more of a... I don't want to say, like, a lisp, but he's sort of his words a little bit more.
Different teeth, probably.
Yeah.
New teeth.
The Skagra sends the sphere at the Professor, and K-9 shoots it, and it crashes to the ground in many pieces. And all of those mini pieces turn into...
Mega pieces. No, I don't know.
It turns one sphere into a bunch of spheres, and it's like, oh, shit! Oh, no! And then the spheres attach to the prisoners, they attach to the Professor... And they attach to Chris. And it turns...
That seems like a waste.
And it turns them into zombies now, instead of...
Because he has that knowledge.
Oh, now he has the Sally Aven knowledge.
Yes.
But didn't he already have it?
No.
He killed the Professor in, like, episode 2. Why doesn't he already have Sally Aven's shit?
Great question.
I guess he did, and he just didn't realize it. Right? And now he's like, oh, I guess I do know that.
Or maybe he just, like, he locked it off somehow. Like, he's very forgetful and doesn't remember things. Maybe
he's intentionally forgetful.
Maybe.
Because he's got dangerous knowledge up in that noggin.
Yeah, he put it in his, like, what's that thing from Harry Potter? Where they pulled the memories out and stuff them in a little thing? He's got one of those.
Man, I don't remember.
But that is the cliffhanger. That is the end of episode 5, and we're now into the last episode, episode 6, The Mind Revolution!
You look really proud.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I just said it. Because there is a bit where Skagra says that he's going to start the mind revolution. K-9 starts shooting the prisoners that are coming after him, and then Tony gets very upset when the Krark picks up K-9 and just chucks him.
You can't do that to my dog!
You can't do that to any dog, really. Don't throw dogs.
Right.
Please.
It's real bad. At one time, have you ever been holding a dog and forgetting that you're not holding a cat? No, it happened to me once. And I was like, here you go, get down on the floor now. And the dog was like, ah. It just happened one time, and the dog was fine. You shouldn't have brought it up. Don't throw dogs.
Is this what you want on our podcast?
No! I regretted it instantly.
This is why I'm divorcing you.
I love you, Joe.
I love you. I've started writing my vows, like, as we're doing the podcast. It's very distracting, but... I'm just ready. I'm like, I'm very horny for this. Okay. So everyone heads back to the Professor's TARDIS, his room, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. And Romana says, like, gives him an idea and says like, your brain's in the melting pot, right? Your brain was absorbed into this big sphere thing. You could probably utilize that somehow. And he's like, Romana, you're a genius. And then, like, I'm going to give you something. And he pulls a medal out of his pocket and pins it to her shirt. He does this weird head bob thing, and then they salute each other. which he's given a first prize to K-9, and now he's given a medal to Romana.
Do you think he just got, like, a deal somewhere where he, like, bought a bunch of medals and shit off of eBay, and he's like, I've really got to commit to this bit.
And he also had gold star stickers in Horns and Eyemon, too, so he's got a lot of, like, good jobs sort of things in his pocket. I think there was even, like, a reference to that in one of your Game of Razzlon things, where she was giving people stickers.
Yeah, when we did our live show, the stickers the doctor handed out say, "You're grape," and they have a picture of a grape smiling on them. So when we did our live show, when people paid at the door, we gave them a grape-scented sticker to show that they had paid.
Aw, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
You're grape.
You're grape.
Yeah, I wanted something that was reminiscent of the sort of stickers I was given at school all the time by teachers who thought I was awesome.
That happened a lot?
Yeah.
Joe didn't go to school, so he doesn't know.
I went to school. I went all the way through the fourth grade.
You ever get stickers?
Yeah, and I never got a hole in my apple. Maybe I got a couple holes in my apple.
A hole in your apple?
If you did something bad, you got a hole in your apple.
Oh, we had color escalating cards. If you were on your green card, you were good. If you were on your yellow card, you did something bad. And if you were on your red card, you were literally the fucking worst and they shot you. That's what I thought in kindergarten.
Yeah, in America, they just shoot you. The doctor connects the TARDISes. They're in the professor's TARDIS. He connects it to his TARDIS. They track it, and then there's just this green bridge of light between the two TARDISes. Did they make that for this one, or was that like an effect that they had already done? Because there's live-action footage there. But I was surprised that they would have already done, like, special effects.
There were a lot of visual effects that they shot specifically for this, and they actually got the model unit to do some of the shots of the TARDIS in space and so on. A lot of that stuff was done in 2016, and you can see the behind-the-scenes stuff on the Blu-ray, and some of it is on the BBC's Doctor Who Facebook page as well.
Oh, cool. I need to check that out, then. Connects the two, and he's walks through like a force field and walks across this bridge between the two TARDISes. He's crawling across, and like Romana and Claire have to like hold these levers down, but the levers are getting hot, and then Claire lets go because it's too hot, and you're like, oh no, did the doctor get lost in the vortex of space?
But no, he didn't.
He lands.
It was fine.
He lands in the TARDIS in a storage room, which has a bunch of little Easter eggs in it. Like, there's the, I think there's like the Tomtit thing is in there. There's a Cyberman helmet. And there's all sorts of little neat stuff in the background if you look at that scene. But he puts some pieces together and makes a little helmet himself. They all arrive somewhere, I think on his base, on Skagra's base. Professor's TARDIS and the Doctor's TARDIS. And the Skagra is, like, waiting outside the Professor's TARDIS door, like, waiting for him to come out so he can shoot him. And the Doctor just sort of, like, sneaks up behind him. He has this helmet on, and he can use it to connect with his copy of his brain that's in the, like, sphere collective. Then they have a brain fight, and he's, like, trying to control things because he's got a connection. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
I know what you're talking about. That all checks out.
Cool. There's some fighting of Krargs. Romana pushes one into a vat. It explodes. And then they electrocute the rest of them by doing some shit. There's a lot of fighting going on at this point. So much so that Skagra is like, oh shit, it's going bad. I'm going to run away. And he runs back to his ship and gets cubed away. Chris wakes up and he's back to his normal self. And the doctor says that he can fix all of everybody's brains. And he's going to return the prisoners to Shada. Which I think Romana's like, that seems kind of shitty, like just putting them back in a prison that everyone's forgotten about, because Sally Yavin made everyone forget about it because he escaped.
So no one would discover that he escaped.
And he's like, well, it's not my problem.
Which, in fairness, it is not his problem.
And then Skagra appears in the holding cell. He's like, what the hell? Why am I in here? And the ship starts talking to him about how great the doctor is and how the ship now works for the doctor. Skagra has a bit of a mental breakdown, and it's like, that's some real good acting. He's just like, let me go! Let me go! Release me! And he's like, he falls to his knees and he's like running his hands over his face and he's shaking all over.
Yeah, and the computer spends the whole time going, oh man, the doctor is so dope. He's so awesome, right? Did you see that one year where the Cybermen invaded London and he just like pow, just dealt with it. Awesome. That's what the computer sounds like.
Wilkin, meanwhile, has reported the stolen room to a policeman, and they go to check it out, and they open the door, and the room has returned, and everyone is having tea and reading that poet,
the Gallifreyan fairy tale.
The nursery book.
I have to say, The Room Returns, I was not expecting a sequel to the Tommy Wiseau movie The Room, but it was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, it stars Tom Baker as...
The Room.
Yes. And the policeman is very much like, well, this is a big waste of my time. Thank you. But then he's like, wait a second, why do you have a police box?
He thinks they stole the police box.
And the doctor and Romana go inside of it, and then it vanishes. And the policeman is like, y'all are all arrested.
We end this scene on a hilarious abuse of power by a police officer.
The reaction is seeing something like incredible in front of you and just being like, I don't know what just happened, but it was illegal. And you're all arrested for this nonsense, breaking the rules of physics. I won't have it.
So what you're saying is, this man is your role model and you wish to be him.
Yeah.
And that, I assume that was the end of the serial, originally.
But no. What happens next is what was originally scripted. It was not tacked on at the end. It was in the original script. There's a version of it on the 1992 version with the linking narration by Tom Baker. There's a version of it with in the Paul McGann audio. It's just for this particular version, they decided to do something kind of sweet with it.
It felt like it was specifically written for this because of like the way that the scene ends. It's kind of nice. The doctor's tinkering with the console. He's underneath it, and like they're sort of discussing the story that just happened. Gives a sort of background on Skagra, and then Romana wonders if the stories about Sal Yavin were exaggerated because he seemed like a nice old man. And then the doctor says they probably were exaggerated. The Time Lords overreact about everything, and like he climbs up from behind the console, and he stands up, and it's Tom Baker now. Well, whenever they filmed this.
2017?
Yeah, very early 17, yeah.
He's like, they overreact about everything. Look how they treat me. And he's like, you know, 200 years from now, someone will probably be like, is that really the doctor? He seems such a nice old man.
And then Tom Baker grins into the camera.
Because of course he does. That's my last note. Old Tom Baker laughs right at the camera.
Roll credits.
And that's it. That's the end of Shada.
Good, because I have 15 minutes.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Hey, Adam Thomas.
Yes, Thomas Mariani.
You know how there are podcasts about bad movies?
Yeah.
And also podcasts about good movies?
Yeah.
Well, what if a podcast could cover both?
What?
Listen to Double Edge Double Bill, where a randomly selected yin and yang of a double feature is picked and then picked apart.
Now, who came up with this wacky idea?
Adam, we did. That's our show.
I'm learning something new every day.
Listen to us on the ESO Network and wherever podcasts are available.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It's time for final thoughts.
Yeah, let's do it.
Final thoughts! Shada is a delightful story with a lot of great gags, a lot of strong and interesting characters that it does not live up to its mythic status among Doctor Who fandom. It is, especially I think if you've read Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Bacon Farm, that's definitely because so many elements were recycled, it becomes very clear that, you know, you're not necessarily experiencing a wholly new adventure. It's a twist on an adventure you may have already read. But it's still enjoyable. It still has that flair that Douglas Adams brought to all of his stories. It's just not the strongest thing he's ever written. It's not even the strongest thing he's written for Doctor Who, even. It's fun, and it's a delightful romp. It is, I would think, maybe two episodes too long. I think that a lot of six-part stories, however, especially during the Pertwee and Baker eras. It's not bad by any stretch. It's good. It's fun. It's just not legendary.
I had a lot of fun watching this serial. It was kind of a bummer that it didn't exist. At the time, I was like, this is great. This is one of my favorites so far. And then, like, when we were, like, making the notes to talk through it, I was like, there's really not much to it. It's a good place for a lot of jokes. I mean, there's some really interesting ideas and stuff in there, too. It's just a good, fun Douglas Adams-y episode. I'm never going to complain about that.
I do think if they had actually finished it, it would have been one of the best serials of this season.
Yeah.
City of Death was this season, too, I think, right? So those two were tops. And I feel like this season gets a lot of shit for being kind of bad and goofy and silly, but like, and there's only like one good serial, which is City of Death. But if Shada had happened, there would have been two. So maybe people wouldn't have been so harsh on this season. But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really, it's really funny. I don't mind the Dirk Gently stuff too much because like,
it
I like
Dirk Gently. Honestly, says, kind of weird. It was kind of like seeing a friend.
Yeah, and it doesn't really like do any of the same plot stuff as Dirk Gently. It just has the character. The plot stuff actually comes more from City of Death with the whole alien trying to go back to the beginning of time to fix a thing which could wipe out humanity. But yeah, I don't know. I really liked it. I thought all the characters were... I liked all the like secondary characters. And the only thing I would have changed is I would have, yeah, it's probably two episodes too long. I would have gotten rid of the Krogs entirely. I don't think they're necessary.
You need a monster, though. The thing about Doctor Who, and this is the thing that people forget when they talk about it from a critical perspective, is this is a show that is designed also to entertain children. So you need a monster. You need to have something that kids can be slightly scared of and/or pretend to be on the playground at school the next day. So to that end, I think the Krogs are kind of underserved by the fact that a lot of their stuff didn't get shot. It either had to be animated or shot from the feet up because they only built part of a costume for the reconstruction. So I feel like if they had finished this, the Krogs might have been more interesting. They might be one of those slightly silly Doctor Who monsters that we would have talked about throughout the 90s and the noughties. But I don't have a problem with the Krogs. I don't have a problem with the existence of the Krogs. I think they are a right and good thing to have in Doctor Who.
I think the spheres are good enough as a monster, yeah.
But a kid can't pretend to be a sphere on the playground. That's the key difference.
I pretended to be Ghost Rider.
You can't pretend to be a ball on the playground. What you can do is play dodgeball, and then the ball doesn't stick to the person's forehead, but if you throw it too hard, you do give them a concussion. That's less interesting.
All I've ever wanted to be is just this hover sphere, ever. I would pretend to be one.
Yeah, but you like fun robots.
That's true. But I also want to be, like, completely featureless because I don't want anyone to gain any knowledge about me from looking at me. It's rude!
I honestly think your preferred form, Tony, would be a flat, featureless book written in a dead language. That's what I think you yearn for as kind of a physical state.
No, it's definitely an angry hover orb, for sure.
It's gotta be angry.
Yeah.
And round.
And round.
And float.
Yeah, I gotta get around.
So you connected a lot with these spheres.
Yeah.
It's interesting to know that that was basically the character you were gonna play as when we recorded our test run of the game of Rassilon many, many years ago.
Yeah, man, I saw an opportunity and I took it.
Speaking of, is there anything you'd like to plug before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. Do please listen to The Game of Rassilon, which you can find by searching your podcast app for The Game of Rassilon. We are on most platforms, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed or just listen to the thing by going to thedeath.zone or thegameofrassilon.com or adventuresintimeand.space. These are all working domains that work and exist and are great.
Great.
You can find out what I'm up to online. My Twitter and Instagram are both Ben Padden, BenPaddon, or you can go to benpadden.net for updates on when I'm doing stand-up in the Los Angeles area or making guest appearances or doing other sorts of live shows. I am right now running slightly late to get ready for an anime convention that, by the time you listen to this, has already happened in the past. So I do a lot of stand-up and comedy anime conventions, despite the fact that my anime knowledge more or less begins and ends with Lupin the Third. But I have good fun. I hope I see people out in the world, because if I go outside and there's no one there, that means that the apocalypse has happened and I'm the last man. It's a Why the Last Man situation, and I do not own a monkey. That would be sad. I have no other comments at this time. Please, if you need any further commentary, please contact me through my lawyer. He's a top guy, and he's real. And he hasn't lost any major clients that I know of.
For us, same stuff we always do. Please watch The Unseen World.
Please, please, please. Find it on Roku or watchheartlandtv.com.
And be sure to check out our new podcast, Burn Noticed, where we talk about the podcast Burn Noticed, which is about the USA show Burn Notice. It's not that complicated. And if you like this episode, check out more on watchyourassalon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It helps us out by doing iTunes magic. If you'd like to help us out even more, go to watchyourassalon.com/support, and there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, Discord servers, and live streams. just the one. And live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com.
I'm going to say a thing. If you want to use it in future episodes, you're welcome to. You don't have to. But it's me going, Golden! like a basketball dunk. Like I'm throwing a three-pointer.
I'm going to send that to Matt so he can make that his text tone. Actually, I'm going to put it so that's my text tone when he texts me.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
And I want to give a special shout out to Vincent EL for providing us with our theme song.
Thanks, Vince.
You can check out more of Vince's stuff at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the Leisure Hive. And thanks again for being on the show, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was a delight. I would like to do another one when there's less of a time constraint.
We will see if we can make that happen.
Woo!
Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Good boo!
No, this guy, you'd like this bit. This is good bit.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.